afternoon. You are tuned into Juno Afternoon here for Friday, the 7th of October, the year 2016. Today on the show, we'll get a preview of this weekend's Falltoberfest with Easy Leaves and Big Chimney. Artist Lana Nestag will be here with her to highlight her first Friday opening at Alaska Robotics. I'll talk with artist Christine Clemhance about her first Friday show at the Copa. That Writer's Almanac, Murdoch Music Award today on Juno Afternoon. With the forecast for today, tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures in the mid-30s. Forecast for Saturday, clear skies, high temperatures around 50 degrees. Saturday night, clear. Sunday, mostly clear. Sunday night, clear.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Oglala Sioux Tribal Council removed three judges following the death of a two-year-old boy involved in a custody battle. The Rapid City Journal reports the judges returned the boy to his mother over the concerns by the boy's aunt, Angela Shangru, who had been taking care of the boy. The mother, Katrina Shangru, is now charged with the boy's murder. The paper reports Angela Shangru, a resident of the Pine Ridge Reservation, filed a complaint against the judges, saying she warned of her sister's drug and alcohol abuse and her potential to harm the child. The tribal council met in closed session Monday. The journal reports the council has removed at least four other judges since 2010 for violating the tribe's law and order code. The Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde in Oregon resolved a years-long enrollment dispute this week by formally adding 67 descendants of a treaty signer to the member rolls. The tribe's elections board originally initiated the disenrollment process against the descendants of Cascades Indian Chief Tumuth after an audit 3 years ago. The audit concluded Chief Tumuth was not on the official rolls of the Grand Ronde tribe established by the U.S. Department of Interior in 1855. That's because the chief was killed by the U.S. Army before he was able to return to the newly established reservation. In August, the Tribal Appeals Court ruled in favor of the descendants, saying the tribe failed to act in a timely manner. The Grand Ronde tribal newspaper Smoke Signals quotes Tribal Council Chairman Rain Leno as saying the most recent move by the elections board reinstating the descendants was, quote, a difficult decision for everybody. Navajo Nation officials are seeking legal advice after the council's speaker questioned the legitimacy of the $651 million budget approved last week. The Farmington Daily Times reports the tribe's controller will be speaking with the Attorney General and Chief Legislative Counsel. The action comes after Lorenzo Bates raised questions about line item vetoes by President Russell Begay. Bates says Begay was out of the state when the vetoes were recorded. The paper reports tribal law dictates such vetoes need to be executed within the jurisdiction of the Navajo Nation. The 17 vetoes targeted funding for certain economic development, public safety, and natural resources programs, as well as money for two government branches. Bethel, Alaska radio station KYUK is adding to its offering of Yupik language news.
Good morning, Agluchi.
That is John Akumjakik Active introducing his new Yupik language segment with international news. Active says he focuses the translations of news with the elders who watch TV news at home in mind.
When they hear and watch the news on TV, they ask their family members, where is this happening? What is happening? How is it happening? Why is it happening? I mainly considered those guys when we started this show.
KYUK already airs Yupik language local and state news four times every weekday. The station's general manager, Shane Iverson, says the international news translations will help Yupik speakers have a more well-rounded view of the world's events.
The idea was just to expand that to make sure our Yupik audience is fully informed of all the big events happening in the world, and specifically people who speak Yupik as a first language, to make sure they hear the news in a language that makes the most sense to them.
KYUK's Charles Enoch recorded the interviews for this story. The news translations started in late September. Station officials are now working to get the word out to people who might want to listen. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
Now, National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the University of Tulsa College of Law's online Indian Law Master's Degree Program to help you work effectively in Indian Country. Spring application deadline is December 1st. More information at 844-573-3934.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into it Juno afternoon. Our first guest is Christine Kleinhan. She's having her first Friday show at COPA today. Christine, thank you for coming in the station.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, you brought your work in here. It looks like it's woodblocks. Can you describe your work?
Sure, I would love to. It's very similar to woodblock. It's actually embarrassingly simple. I use a ballpoint pen instead of a carving tool. I'll explain. With a wood block, you carve away the wood and use your print, but I found a process that's a bit simpler and perfect for my style of art that uses foam. And the embarrassing part of this is that it's actually advertised for children, but it's perfect for me. What I do is I take my pen and I draw, and in the drawing, it creates pressure, which presses down into the foam, and then that creates the design. After I create a design that I'm okay with, sometimes I don't enjoy what I draw, and that just gets tossed. But if I'm okay with it, I mix my printing ink together and use a roller and roll on the ink, and then the foam becomes like a stamp, and I'm able to stamp the paper and apply pressure and then peel it off, and there's the design.
So wherever you've drawn with the ballpoint pen, doesn't get printed.
Right. Whatever I've drawn ends up turning in reverse on the paper and getting printed, similarly to a stamp.
What got you started doing that?
Yeah. Thank you.
What got you started doing that?
Oh, what got me started doing that? Well, I'm a speech-language pathologist in the Juneau School District, and last year at one of our special ed meetings, the Canvas came to explain how we could use art in our classroom and showed all of us how to create with foam. And I became so interested in the process, I went home and started creating right away. And I've just been lucky that people have received that well.
What are your inspirations?
You know, I've grown up with art in my home. My mom would dabble with oils and canvas. And so I think I've just always been interested in creating. I took some art classes in college, but I like having an escape for sanity's sake. And so over the years, I've just kept creating just try to enjoy myself in the process.
What are your favorite subjects to do your art with?
I like looking at things in nature and trying to recreate them in a special way. I love gardening and hiking and being out on the water. So my art at COPA today represents that. I have the wild animals of Alaska, the bears, the salmon, the ravens, the whales, the seals, and plants that can be seen in my yard.
You have note cards and also slightly larger ones can be fit in an 8x10 frame. Do you just restrict yourself to smaller works, or do you have big, huge, giant things to make?
At home, You can sometimes see me getting messy with acrylic paints in my house. But for this show, I am doing the 4x6 smaller prints that are on an 8x10 piece of paper. And on the wall in Copa today, you'll see the first editions framed and mounted on the wall.
And in the studio with us now is Mark Wheeler. Mark, thank you for coming by.
Hey, Jeff. I brought you some ice cream.
Well, that's the other opening.
Yeah, we're trying to, for every first Friday now, release a new ice cream flavor. And we made some lemon wild blueberry cheesecake ice cream with wild blueberries.
Do you decide what you're going to make that week?
It's a few weeks in advance. Yeah, it's depending on how, you know, sales go. But we you know, make a small test batch and then try to refine it and then try to get it out. It probably takes, you know, a couple weeks. But Crystal, our baker and ice cream maker, made this, and it's really good. I hope you like it.
Well,
will you eat it on air for the listening fellow, Jeff?
Can you just describe it as I'm...
Yeah, so with fruits, we like to cook them down because you don't want water in your ice cream. So we cook the blueberries down and make a swirl and then use some special magic to make the cream cheese base. So it's swirled in there with some lemon zest and some cheesecake ice cream. What do you think?
Tastes great.
All right. So we're going to have a little opening tonight from 5 to 6. You can come down and buy some of Christine's wonderful art, or just check it out and get some ice cream.
That sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm. Ice cream and also great artwork.
Ice cream and art.
Don't put the ice cream on the art. We ice cream can be messy, so keep your distance. But there's room enough for both.
Definitely.
And your artwork's going to be for sale?
It will. It will. The printed first editions on the wall, the framed first editions, as well as a few editions of variety of colors that have been put in sleeves and matted.
Cool. Christian Kleinan, thank you for coming down to the station today. And Mark Wheeler, thank you for coming by.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 7th of October, 2016. It's the birthday of the Australian author Thomas Keneally, born in Sydney, 1935, entered the seminary to become a priest, was there for 6 years, had second thoughts, left to become a writer. He said later, "I thought if I get published, I can make up for the fact that I'm a mad, ruined monk and work my way into society, including the society of girls." He's written many novels, several books of nonfiction, best known to us as the author of Schindler's Ark, the book on which the Steven Spielberg film Schindler's List was based. It's the birthday of the poet Diane Ackerman, born Waukegan, Illinois, 1948, who blends science and literary art. Her first book of poems entirely about astronomy, called The Planets, a Cosmic Pastoral, best known for her book A Natural History of the Senses, came out in the 90s. It's the birthday of the Danish physicist Niels Bohr, born in Copenhagen, 1885, who theorized that atoms were composed of a small, dense nucleus orbited by electrons, and came up with the idea of complementarity, that things like light or electrons can have a dual nature. And it was on this day in San Francisco, 1955, Allen Ginsberg read his poem Howl at the Six Gallery, a reading to promote the art gallery, as organized by the poet Kenneth Rexroth. Gary Snyder was there, and Jack Kerouac. Ginsberg was the second to the last to read. He started at about 11 o'clock at night. He was 29 years old. He'd never taken part in a poetry reading before. Started off very quietly, but as he read, he found his rhythm, took a deep breath before each of the long lines in the poem, and then said each line in one breath. Read the whole thing, and the audience went wild. Here's a poem for today by Stephen Dobbins, Loud Music. My stepdaughter and I circle round and round. You see, I like the music loud, the speakers throbbing, jam-packing the room with sound. Whether Bach or rock and roll, the volume cranked up so each bass note is like a hand smacking the gut. But my stepdaughter disagrees. She is 4 and likes the music decorous, pitched below her own voice, that tenuous projection of self. With music blasting, she feels she disappears, is lost within the blare, which in fact I like. But at 4, what she wants is self-location and uses her voice as a porpoise uses its sonar to find herself in all this space. If she had a sort of box with a peephole and looked inside, what she'd like to see would be herself standing there in her red pants, jacket, yellow plastic lunchbox, a proper subject for serious study. But me, if I raised the same box to my eye, I would wish to find the ocean on one of those days when wind and thick cloud make the water gray and restless, as if some creature brooded underneath a rocky coast with a road along the shore where someone like me was walking and has gone. Loud music does this. It wipes out the ego, leaving turbulent water and winding road, a landscape stripped of people and language. How clear the air becomes, how sharp the colors. Loud Music, a poem by Stephen Dobbins, from Cemetery Nights, published by Penguin, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Music here in the studio. That's a big tune, barn dance, and a whole bunch of people in the studio playing music, getting ready for the Fall Toberfest, which is coming up tonight and tomorrow here in the capital city. Ian Putnam is here in the studio.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. So who's? Can you tell me who these people are? Maybe the audience.
Oh, we got Big Chimney Barnes. We got Jay Marvin here on the banjo. We got Garen Volper playing the bass right now, acapella bass. We got Nate Williamson. Oh my gosh, on guitar. We got
to my name.
We got Danny Constantine.
Yeah, you got it.
And we have
Jason Norris.
We got two fiddle players.
Jason Norris.
They'll be playing tomorrow night, starting off with a call dance with Jack Fontanella Collin, and they'll be playing the final set of Saturday night as well.
It's a benefit for the Alaska Folk Festival.
Yeah, this is a fundraiser for the Alaska Folk Festival. We try to throw this festival as an effort to give people who may have missed the Folk Fest in April a chance to see it in the fall, but also it's a fundraiser. We're trying to earn some money to make the next Alaska Folk Festival in April as fun as possible, as beneficial as possible to the public.
How did the Big Jiminy Barnes get together?
Ooh, that's just like a difficult question. Like, couldn't he start with like an easier question?
Anchorage needed more dance bands, so this is our effort to contribute towards our community for dance bands.
Yeah, and basically we like to have fun, and that's what we're going to do. That's what we've been doing, and that's what we're going to do, and we're just going to just get together and have a little more fun. And right?
Isn't that more fun?
Juno's going to have fun with us. We're going to have fun with Juno.
I'm another tune.
All right. Yeah, that sounds good. What do you say we play another tune, boys?
Sounds good.
Oh, you kick it off.
Kind of, but...
Yeah, I'm going to kick it off on that old 5-string banjo. like that?
Like, keep going.
Oh, okay. Listening to live music.
Keep going. Going.
Like,
that's okay.
We're getting ready for the Falltoberfest.
Yeah, we got the Falltoberfest. It's tonight and tomorrow night, starting at, doors open at 7 p.m. $15 for a single night and $25 for both nights. Highly recommend both nights. All funds raised go to the Alaska Folk Festival. Tonight we're starting off with the North Country Cajun Club. If you like dancing, you like two-stepping, you like waltzing, it's a great band for that. We got the Easy Leaves, a honky-tonk band, great band from the San Francisco Bay Area. And then we have Gamble and the High Costa Lovin'. Colette Costa, Mike Gamble, probably the best big band in town. Come catch them. They're great. If you like to dance, they're perfect. Then followed by Saturday night, we got Big Chimney with a Call Dance. We got the Easy Leaves again, with some more honky-tonk. And then we have Big Chimney finishing it out with a hard-driving dance set. So, yeah.
Where do you get your tunes from?
Well, I mean, they're old. They're all old tunes.
They all came from Danny. Yeah. They're all from dead guys.
Pretty much. We didn't write any of them. They come from back in Appalachia mostly and all around the country. It's just country music.
I thought you wrote them.
Should we tell them that?
Yeah.
I mean, you can really say whatever you want on the radio, right?
Yeah. Danny wrote them.
Another one.
Oh, all right.
Oh,
we have to
play one more.
Yeah, let's
see. What do you got?
You got come on, Danny, you wrote them.
Oh, you want to just play, just like a... Yeah, we could do that. Well, I got to tune that one.
Right,
yeah, let's do that Wool Mule. That's a good one. Ready, boys?
Just that man. Well, whoa, you, whoa, whoa, you, I.
preview of the Falltoberfest, which is coming up your way. And you want to tell people where you get tickets?
Yeah, you can get your tickets at the Jack Hearthside and Rainy Retreat up until 6:30 p.m. tonight. We also are going to be selling them at the door, the upstairs of the Rockwell Ballroom. So if you don't have your tickets right yet, that's okay. But if you get them early, you don't have to wait in line. So that's the advantage. But hope we see you guys there.
All right, and that was another tune that Danny Constantine wrote.
Yeah, all old-time tunes are Danny Constantine songs. So, yes.
All right, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks,
thank you for having us. We're going to have a lot of fun.
This is Bird Note. Are any birds more conspicuous by their absence than swallows? Through all of spring and summer, swallows dart and sail overhead, their airborne grace a wonder to behold. So, while October marks a lovely juncture in the change of seasons, the skies seem empty. The swallows have flown south. Swallows feed almost exclusively on flying insects, abundant in the warmer months, scarcer as fall takes hold. The swallows, 8 species nest in the United States, must fly south for the winter, to latitudes where aerial insects are to be found. So, if you wanted to follow the swallows in winter, where would that journey take you? Well, to catch up with violet green and tree swallows, you'd traverse much of Central America. A search for the other 6 species would take you through much of South America. Indeed, to see cliff swallows, you'd have to strike off as far south as Argentina. For a parting look at swallow flocks in early October, visit the sort of places they concentrate before migrating. Check around large open fields or pastures, or wetlands like marshes or ponds, for a last chance to say farewell until next March or April.
Programming is made possible in part by Juno's Own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juno stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
It's 33 minutes past the hour. You are tuned in to Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Lina.
Hello.
Hi, Lina. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
So you're an artist and you get your material showing at the Alaska Robotics Gallery.
Yes.
Could you please describe your artwork?
I do chicks, and I also draw arrows, and when I do my chicks, I add accessories so they all look different, and I also like to vary my options of arrows.
Now, when you say you paint chicks, you mean baby chickens?
Sort of like birds. They're sort of circular, and,
How'd you get started doing that?
When I was 5, I was at my grandma's house, and I was looking on Pinterest for something to do, and I saw a drawing of a bird, and so I tried to draw that bird, but it did not turn out like that, but I liked it anyways, so I drew those, and they didn't have accessories. And then a couple years later, I was at my brother's baseball game, and I was on the bleachers, and I had run out of books. And then I remembered that I had done this art a long time ago, so I grabbed a piece of paper and a pencil, and I began to draw some. So I added accessories so that they didn't look so plain.
That was really neat to get to show happening tonight at the Alaska Robotics Gallery. Do you tell me the materials you use?
I color them digitally on an app called Colorfy. And the first ones I did when I was 5, I did with watercolor. And I have a wide selection of colors, and I like to use different colors.
Now, I know I'm not supposed to ask a woman how old she is, but how old are you now?
I'm 10.
How long does it take you to do each chick?
It doesn't take very long. It takes me longer to color it, I think, because I like to make sure the colors look all good together. It probably takes like 3 minutes for each chick.
And how big is your artwork?
It can vary sizes. Like some are in earrings, so they're small, or others are in big prints, and some are in necklaces. We make different sizes.
I see you have a necklace on now. Could you describe your necklace for me?
This is a drawing of two chicks, and one has had a very bad hair day, so it's very loopy, and the other one is telling it that it needs to comb its hair. So they're looking very intensely at each other.
So each picture tells a story?
Yes.
Do they always have a funny story associated with them?
Most of them.
All right. What's your favorite thing about doing art?
I really like doing art because I think it's a good way to express yourself. If you were feeling angry, maybe you could draw a red chick. Or if you're feeling sad, maybe you draw a blue chick. And that has always inspired me to draw different kinds of chicks.
All right. What time does your show start?
4:00.
That's at the Alaska Robotics Gallery there on Franklin Street. Front Street, excuse me.
Yes.
Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I'd really like to thank Pat Race and his gallery for letting me do this, and also my brother, because he's always really nice to me, and he always inspires me.
Does he give you constructive criticism?
Huh?
Does he help you out?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming down, Lana.
Thank you.
Here, and you are tuned into it Junior Afternoon. Our next group of people is slightly smaller, the Easy Leaves. We've got Sage and
Kevin Carducci.
Pardon, one more time.
Kevin Carducci.
All right, thank you for coming by.
Well, you know, our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
What are you going to be playing today?
We're not going to actually be playing in the studio, but we brought a CD, one of our newest recordings here, for you to play some tracks off of.
That is our single Fresno. We're up here from California. You might have heard of Fresno. It's a real hot valley town down there, an agricultural hub.
Well, I guess we'll just start the music and that'll describe itself for now.
I've been one for fancy dancing. I've been one for pitching woo. I've been thinking about you, darling, ever since I shame how low we've been, but I know where there's an old town to match that downward bend. When the night falls like a curtain and the hillside shrugs me off, from the coast, and all the views here sure are pretty. Still, I want to go where the air burns like fire and the sky's as wide as a harvest moon. Won't you leave?
From Folk Festivals with us. Val, you want to tell us about the Falltoberfest, which is coming tonight and tomorrow night?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. It's just like Ian said a few minutes ago, it's tonight and tomorrow at the Rockwell Ballroom. We got four bands coming and 8 hours of music total, I think, for everything. So should be a lot of dancing and a lot of fun. And the brand new disco dance floor installed at the Rockwell Ballroom, which if you haven't seen, is worth coming. That's worth the ticket price alone, I think.
That thing is cool.
Yeah.
It was. We were doing a sound check yesterday, and it was flashing, and the dance floor actually dances a little bit, if you can believe that. It's something. It's
yep.
Wild.
You don't have to know how to dance. The floor will do it for you.
You stand there. You look great.
Tell me about the Easy Leaves, please.
The Easy Leaves, we're Kevin Carducci and Sage Fifield. We're up here from Santa Rosa, California. We play original California country music, particularly honky tonk.
And tonight we have a full band with us. We've got a couple of guys from San Francisco, Kyle O'Brien on fiddle, amazing fiddle player, and Mississippi Mike Wolf on telecast. That's electric guitar.
And local legend Clay Good on drums.
So yeah, it should be a honky-tonk and good time, our set. And then we're playing in the middle, I believe, after the first band. There's another band after us, and so we'll have time to hang out and try out that dance floor.
And California is such a big state. How did you find each other to start playing music together?
Just chance. Started playing the same open mics, you know? That's how it happens. How does anything happen, right? Just luck.
Do you write that song about Fresno?
Yeah. I grew up in the Sierra Nevada, and Fresno is just a big city down there in the valley, and you could see the lights from up there in the hills, and just kind of stuck in my mind over all those years, and then it popped out. That song just popped out one afternoon, and I was just walking around heartbroken.
And Fresno is just a hop, skip, and a jump from Bakersfield, where Buck Owens started. Do you get inspiration from the area that you live in?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, all that stuff rubs off on you, you know. I find it a little bit more subconscious, you know, than a conscious thing. But yeah, you pick up what's around you to some degree, you know. So definitely try to carry on that tradition to some degree.
And Sage, what do you play?
Guitar, harmonica, and vocals, yeah.
And I play the upright bass and sing as well. You might have heard the harmonies are a big part of our sound. We do a lot of that.
What else can you be playing honky-tonk tonight and songs that make people cry?
Well, actually, you could play another tune off of that record there. We play a lot of upbeat stuff. I would say
track number 2 is
90% of what we do is real upbeat. So yeah, if you pop on track number 2 there, you'll get a taste for some of the more upbeat kind of stuff we do.
Sunday morning, like peaceful.
listen to a little music from the Easy Leaves. They're part of the... I keep wanting to say Oktoberfest or Novemberfest. It's
close enough. We keep changing it.
So you come from... What part of California do you call that?
Santa Rosa is where we're based out of. Yeah, which is just north of San Francisco. Real pretty. Wine country out there. Yeah. Sonoma County. California.
Thank you for bringing the CD with you. Could you describe what's going to be the next tune?
The next track on that one is it's called Hurry Up and Die. It's a tune that Kevin wrote. And why don't you tell me about it, Ken?
It's more of a Latin feel. It's more like the Mexicali kind of sound. We got some accordion on there. And, well, it'll speak for itself, I guess.
We were running off to Las Vegas. Take a chance and seal the deal. She changed her cold heart forever. Left me stranded in Bakersfield. At a liquor store gas station, I went to grab a bottle to share. Through the smoking dust, I saw my dreams on bus.
Part of the Falltoberfest, which is coming your way tonight and tomorrow night. Mel, you want to give us the details again, please?
Yeah, it starts tonight at 7 o'clock, runs till 11:30. Tickets are on sale at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and Rainy Retreat Books up until 6:30, and then you can get them at the door at 7, but you'll have to stand in the long, long line, so get them in advance if you can. We'll see you this weekend, 7 to 11:30 tonight and tomorrow.
Give me a message. Thank you for coming by.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Set sail for the tropics on October 8th at Sail's annual dinner auction. Join them for Caribbean-inspired cuisine, tropical drinks, and live entertainment as they celebrate disability rights advocates Lynn Marvel and Tim Huber. Tickets at sailinc.org or 586-4920. All proceeds benefit Sail, inspiring personal independence for seniors and people with disabilities. Again, that's Sail's annual dinner auction, Saturday, October 8th.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
About 3 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned in to Juneau Afternoon. The Saturday hike for October 8th will be the Ben Stewart Trail. The length and final destination will be determined by the group. Plenty of food and water. Meet at the Upper Eagle Crest parking lot at 9:30 in the morning. No dogs or firearms, please. Carpooling is encouraged, and have a great hike. Forecast for tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures in the mid-30s, light winds. Saturday, clear skies with high temperatures around 50 degrees, light winds. Saturday night, clear skies, low temperatures in the mid-30s. Sunday, mostly clear, high temperatures around 50 degrees. Sounds like a lot of great weather we have coming up here. Afternoon, Scott Burton will be your host. We'll learn about the Wednesday's Chef Challenge at Resurrection Lutheran Church. It's a benefit for the food bank. We'll get a preview of Mark Whitman's play, Dick Willoughby's Book of Claims. We'll learn about Perseverance Theater's new production, Not Medea. And we'll get a preview of next week's Mudrooms event.
This is KT.